Hey, it's me, Gavin Crawford. Every week, I'll quiz comedians about the headlines. Do you worry about kids being exposed to drag?
I grew up going to see men in dresses singing every Sunday and we had to give them money, okay? I wish they were singing show tunes and had some makeup and their hair done, right? It would have been way better.
If the news has you screaming into the void, we can help with that. Because News is available on CBC Listen and everywhere you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
We are celebrating two Quebec legends, one who was a star in his home province, and another who became one of the most famous singers on the planet. The actor Michel Côté died yesterday, and Céline Dion canceled her world tour. Today on the show, what their stories tell us about Quebec's star system. I'm El Amin Abdul Mahmoud. This is Commotion. The legendary actor Michel Côté died yesterday. He was 72 years old. You might know him from movies like Life After Love or Crazy. The thing is, Michel wasn't a household name in most of Canada, but he was a giant in Quebec. We're going to remember his work today, and also, speaking of giants, Céline Dion shared some news on Friday. She canceled the rest of her world tour as she continues to battle a neurological disorder that's called stiff person syndrome. At first glance, Céline and Michel's stories might not seem to have that much in common. But if you get in a little bit closer, the connection is that I think they help us appreciate Quebec's unique star system. Natalie Ndongo hosts and produces The Bridge, a show about Quebec arts and culture for CBC. Thomas LeBlanc is a cultural commentator on Radio-Canada and co-producer of the Céline Dion podcast, Céline C'est elle le boss. Hello, Thomas, Natalie. Welcome to Commotion.
Hey, hey, hey.
Thomas, I want to start here. I want to start with the fact that there was a moment of silence in the House of Commons yesterday, and the Prime Minister had this to say about Michel Côté.
Michel Côté was an extraordinary actor who moved us all as Quebecers in so many different ways, and is one that those who don't know who he is would be good to view some of his films.
The Prime Minister there honoring Michel Côté, the quote that you heard there is moving us all as Quebecers. Thomas, how big of a star was Michel Côté from your perspective?
He was one of the biggest film, television, and stage stars. He started his career in the 70s. He actually directed a play called Brew, which I believe still holds the record, the Guinness World Record for the longest playing play. I think they played that show over 3,000 times over a few decades. And then in the 80s, he became a film star with movies like Cruising Bar. But it's really in the 90s that his status got solidified. He was on the most successful sitcom ever in Quebec called La Petite Vie on Radio Canada. It played at 7:30 on Monday nights in the 90s, and every French-speaking Quebecer would watch this show, sometimes over 4 million people watching. Yeah. And eventually he played more roles. He was in Crazy, but he really was a good actor and a really decent human being, always kind of upbeat in interviews, very sensitive, very kind, so very much beloved. And at 72, I think he's kind of the archetypal, like a baby boomer man in Quebec. So I think that's why people are reacting.
I'm so glad that you brought up La Petite Vie. I want people to hear what Michel Côté sounded like as an actor. So in the 90s, you've got him in this super tough role in the TV show Omerta on Thursday nights.
Je vais avoir ma badge de police. De malade, ce gars-là, c'est dangereux.
And then you get to Mondays, and then he was in La Petite Vie, and that sounded like this.
Tout ça pour dire que moi, avec le 250 000, je bâtirais le musée du slip coquille.
Quoi?
Le musée du jackstrap.
So he's very well known for playing these sort of father figure kind of characters. Thomas, how did these roles help him connect with the audience, do you think? What do you mean for you?
Well, I was a kid in the 90s and I remember watching these two shows. I think we have to say from what we're hearing, even if you don't understand French, he was playing a gay character on La Petite Vie and playing up a lot of stereotypes that I don't think would age very well. But I think he still is kind of getting a pass. It was a different time. I think he in Omerta, which was a cop drama, very popular, written by Luc Dion. I think he is like toughness, but is also like is the sort of like psychological torment that he was experimenting. I think people related to that. And he played fathers in so many different, not necessarily on these two shows, but like in so many different projects. And I think that's also what people see in him is kind of a collective, even if he wasn't that old, he was 72, but a sort of collective father, especially for millennials like me.
Natalie, we have to say that, you know, Michel Cortez is being called a giant, although he wasn't very well known outside Quebec. It's hard to have that conversation without putting you very specifically in a linguistic bracket, but it does shape so much of this conversation.
Yeah.
You're an Anglo-Quebecer. How do you understand that?
Well, you know, I think I grew up with very little access or knowledge around Quebec popular culture. Passepartout was like the kids show that I grew up watching. And that was really a family choice where my family said, hey, we need to make sure that your level of French, so get in early, you know, so Passepartout, a kind of kids program. But as the years went on as a teenager, and then add to the fact that I'm a Black Anglo in Quebec, I feel less and less, not now, but then I felt less and less connected to that cultural content, because what is also so specific to underline is that La Petite Vie in particular, and even Brou to a certain regard, the play that he performed for 38 years with his closest friends around the world, those things really highlighted the Francophone Quebec, and I have to say white culture, because there are Francophone Quebecers who are Haitian who might, or North African, who might feel less connected to those stories. But those stories were key for the historic Francophone community here in Quebec. For people to see themselves reflected back. Watching them now, of course, you can find similarities and things that you connect and you feel at home. But for me, it wasn't until Crazy that I really started to know and feel, understand people like Michel Côté, because he stars as the father in this, in Jean-Marc Vallée, the late Jean-Marc Vallée's 2005 film, kind of coming of age story of again, a theme of homosexuality that surfaces a young boy, Zach, his son, is trying to figure out his sexuality and dealing with a family that is struggling to accept it.
I'm glad that you brought up Vallée's film, Crazy. Let's take a listen to this, because it is the thing that sort of put him on the global stage.
Extra-stretch, D.D.!
C'est pas grave, Ben.
Away!
Excuse-moi.
I have to say, Thomas, it's true that, you know, that role sort of made him a little bit famous outside of Quebec with that role in 2005. But it wasn't like he was after that, right? It wasn't like Michel Cortez was specifically after getting big roles south of the border or anything.
No, not at all. I think after Crazy, he's been a sort of bankable box office star in Quebec, because the thing is Quebec audiences, French audiences will show up to watch Quebec-made movies in the theater. That's what people need to understand. Since, you know, it's been like this since at least the 80s. What's interesting with Côté is he's a contemporary of Denis Arcand, for example. And Arcand won an Oscar, showed his films in Cannes. But in respect, in Quebec, there's this respect where if your choice is to be a Denis Arcand, a Dolan, or a Céline Dion, and you want to work abroad and you want to export yourself, that's okay. But if you decide to stay here, you're not less talented, and and in a way, people feel that you belong to them even more, because there's this, like, obviously it can be an insular society, so people feel that if you stay, they have it all for them in a way. So I think that's the kind of, and then there are more actors, you know, there's Michel Côté, but there are a few more who are kind of living legends, but they only work here, and people are so attached and feel such an emotional connection to them.
Natalia,
and that applies to music too. I think that applies to artists who are in other disciplines in the arts in Quebec as well. Quebecers really hold dear. And I felt that pride even when Crazy really got a lot of visibility. It never made it to the Oscar list, but it did, get to festivals around the world and in the U.S. And finally, in 2022, it got theater release in the U.S., of course, after Jean-Marc Vallée's passing.
Yeah. I'm glad that you guys both brought up this point, because that is what's unique about Quebec's star system, right? It doesn't really matter if you become famous in the rest of Canada. You can, in fact, ascend to the status of legend and have people know your name without necessarily sort of breaking out of Quebec. That's not important, nor is it even a career goal. Which leads us to the conversation talking about probably the most famous Quebecer to make it to the world stage. Come on, that voice. It's just, I feel bad interrupting it. It feels rude to me. Natalia, when you heard that she was canceling her world tour, what occurred to you?
You know, Elamine, I mean, of course, she had announced that she was going to cancel a few dates, yeah. Right? When she announced that her health was not well. But what I thought of was that, wow, this person has been performing since 1982. Mm-hmm. This person has been on all the time. There has barely been a moment where we don't see a strong Celine, even in times that were difficult, loss in her life, et cetera, et cetera. And I just thought, wow, she's been carrying so much poise and talent and all this kind of stuff, all of the residencies, all these performances. And her body is telling her, I can't keep up. And that really resonated with me. And just, you know, how much the body can actually break down with us even being able to vocalize it. So I thought, I felt a lot of pain for her, because I would imagine that this has more to do, maybe not even her genetics, has more to do with just the life that she lives and how much stress and pressure has been on her since 12 years old.
I was going to say, and how long she's had that pressure for. Like, that's the extraordinary part, is there's a lot of people who have a fruitful 15, 20-year career. She's been doing this since she was 12 years old. Like, it is genuinely just extraordinary. Thomas, you produce a podcast. It's called Celine, c'est elle la boss. Literally, Celine, she's the boss. She's succeeded on this absolutely massive scale without ever losing sight of her roots in Quebec. Based on what you understand about her personality, about the way she's, overcome so much adversity throughout her life, how do you understand this decision to cancel her tour? And also, maybe you can talk a little bit about what she means to you.
Well, I think I need to state that I'm a fan. I'm a critical fan. I like to poke fun at her, but I think she's obviously a great singer. She's actually also very funny. But I'm very concerned. I think we can kind of trace this back to losing her mother in January 2020. And Celine has, as in the past, what we've seen with when she's lost Renee and when she's lost her father in the 2000s, performing and being on stage and being with fans has really been a way how she's been grieving. In 2016, she was Renee passed in January, and then she was touring in the summer. She played Montreal, Quebec City. So now, because of the pandemic, she wasn't really able to kind of grieve that way. That's kind of my understanding after January 2020. I'm just really concerned. I'm also concerned because in the past she's been such an open book. She's talked about her fertility treatment. She's talked about whatever you want to believe about her love story with Renee, but she talked about it and she's been very visible. But even recently she has been, well, her team has been promoting a movie she's been a part of, Love Again. But no kind of recent visual of her. She hasn't given any interview. Everything is kind of a clip from the movie. And even the songs that she's recorded for the movie sound very digitized. It's not the voice that we're used to. So I think in the fandom right now, people are uneasy. People are also grieving Celine, the athlete, and the sort of like global phenomenon and the sort of the force of nature that we've known her as. So we're kind of curious and really hoping that she can heal, and just, even if she never performs again, that she's just healthy.
Yeah. I saw an amazing clip with a young woman, and just to talk about her impact as a performer, I saw a clip on a French culture program where a 22-year-old woman in France was so worked up because she thought, I've not been able to see her. This was going to be my chance. And now she's canceled the tour. And I worry that I won't be able to see her because she's getting older. She's 55, but also her health. And I thought, wow, that's really special, because I think we have sometimes a love-hate relationship with Celine over here, where we kind of poke fun at her at times. But it's great to see that, she's definitely valued around the world, and to obviously to many generations.
Thomas, I just got to ask you, maybe we'll close with this. Can I just ask you to cast your mind back to when you saw Celine with your grandmother at 5 years old? What was your favorite song?
Well, at the time, my favorite song, I know which song we're going to listen to. It wasn't out yet. It was her first like English record, Unison. My grandmother gave me a tape of that. But her big, what's crazy about Celine is that she was one of the biggest artists in the world in English, but also in French. And her album, Dur, there's this one song, Je sais pas, that's featured on it, came out in 95. And to this day, it's still my favorite Celine song.
That is what we're going to go out on. But I appreciate Thomas, Natalia, I appreciate you being here. Thank you so much. Let's listen to some Celine right now. Thank you.
Thanks, Elamine. Bye.
Leave any clues.
It just regularly feels rude to interrupt that voice. That is Celine Dion, live in Paris back in 1995 with Je sais pas. Before that, you heard Natalia Ndongo. She's the host and producer of The Bridge, a show about Quebec arts and culture for CBC. And Thomas LeBlanc, he's a culture commentator on Radio-Canada and a co-producer of the Celine Dion podcast, Celine C'est elle le boss.
Hi, I'm Willa Paskin, the host of Decoder Ring, Slate's podcast about cracking cultural mysteries. On Decoder Ring, we dive down rabbit holes and obsessively explore questions hiding in plain sight. Like, why has slow dancing gone out of style? And when did we all become obsessed with hydration? And where did the word mullet, you know, to describe a hairstyle, come from? That's Decoder Ring, named one of the best podcasts of 2023 by the New York Times. Listen to new episodes every 2 weeks and make sure to follow us so you never miss one.
My name is Elamine Abdul-Mahmoud. This is Commotion. Listen, you might have noticed that Saturday Night Live was one of the first shows to stop because of the Hollywood writer's strike, and I have been missing it. And listen, if you have been missing it too, if you've been missing sketch comedy in your life, I have a novel for you. I have the perfect novel for you. It's a new book by Curtis Sennenfeld. It's called Romantic Comedy. And it's set in the world of this sketch comedy. It follows a sketch comedy writer named Sally, who works on a show that is a lot like Saturday Night Live. Romantic Comedy was recently picked for Reese Witherspoon's book club. So I started by asking Curtis how she found out that Reese and her production company, Hello Sunshine, chose her novel.
It's so funny. I feel like it should be like, you're walking and like a thousand doves come down from the heavens or something.
Is that not what happens?
Unfortunately not. I mean, it's basically just sort of like calls back and forth between people who work at Hello Sunshine and people who like my agency and my publishing house. It's thrilling, and I'm a big fan of Reese Witherspoon, and it feels kind of like a behind the scenes business sort of discussion.
Yeah, I guess in my mind, it's never a business discussion. It's always been like, you've been hand-chosen by the gods. Please step right this way through these golden, perfect arches.
I like your version better.
Yeah. Okay, so the book takes place on a Saturday Night Live type show. Your protagonist, Sally, has written a sketch called The Danny Horst Rule. Would you please do us the honor of explaining what the sketch is?
Well, the shortest version is that in sort of heterosexual dating, that it's common for men to date up or date above their station or their status, and it's not common for women to. In Sally's particular world, there's these talented but ordinary-looking and maybe schlubby comedy men who date female celebrities who are guests on the show, who are gorgeous, super famous, super talented household names, but the female writers at the show never date the smoking hot, super famous male celebrities.
Right. I think we got to just get it out of the way. How much of this is inspired by Pete Davidson?
Well, it's funny because I do feel like I now spend like about 20% of my waking hours discussing Pete Davidson. It's a pleasure. I mean, it's a privilege and a pleasure. So I have to say, I think Pete Davidson is talented, cute, and seems like very like tender-hearted and endearing. I don't know if I would have written this novel if he had not dated Ariana Grande, let alone Kim Kardashian.
Yeah.
But I also will say, in all sincerity, I don't feel like I wrote a book, a novel about Pete Davidson. Like, I feel like I sort of borrowed this pattern that does exist in real life on SNL and elsewhere, and then invented characters and invented situations and did borrow SNL itself quite liberally.
I love everything about this. I mean, you must have done a lot of research into celebrity relationships to write this book. What did you take away from all that research?
I do have to say that, like, apropos of the so-called Danny Horst rule, that I actually don't think it's surprising that these gorgeous, talented female celebrities want to date men who are funny. I think ultimately the surprising part is that maybe gorgeous male celebrities don't necessarily seem to want to date female comedians. Because it's like, what's better than someone making you laugh? There's nothing better.
Yeah. So what's with these, you know, A-lister men not doing that?
Yeah. I mean, there are a few. Mm. But it's not – there's not the kind of like widespread pattern.
Listen, I heard you watched a lot of SNL during the pandemic and interviewed a couple of people who write for the show for this book. Was there something that surprised you, would you say, about like the personal dynamics of how they play out behind the scenes?
I mean, one, it was a joy to do the research overall.
I bet it was.
Like, you know, which was, as you say, interviewing people. It was also reading memoirs. There's an oral history, a 750-page oral history of Saturday Night Live from 1975 on. It's like a joy. Every page is a joy. One thing that was interesting was, I'm sorry to say that I think that maybe for a lot of people who work at SNL, it's not as fun as it looks. Like, it's like competitive.
What do you mean?
I think that a lot of people, I mean, you know, like, obviously comedians, like writers, are probably more neurotic than average.
Yeah.
And I think that there's a lot of people fighting for screen time, feeling like, or for airtime, feeling like,
oh, because you might not get a sketch on the air that week, right?
Yeah. And you might think you do up until, you know, 10 minutes before the live show. So there's a lot of like heartbreak, and there's a lot of, you know, I mean, I think there's sort of like, it feels like maybe favorites are, and you're not a favorite, or you were the most talented person you knew before you were on SNL, and now you're just, you know, a face in the crowd or something. So I think there are people have like really beautiful, special, hilarious experiences, but I think from a distance it might be tempting to be like, it's a nonstop joy fest, and I don't think it is, alas.
Yeah, there's something really vulnerable, right, about being like, I'm here and I'm one of maybe 10 people who can do this job, and they're like, actually, we like the other 7 better. But so you're not on this week.
Yeah, and I think there could also be like, if you're almost too demographically similar to someone, it's like, oh no, she can play the middle-aged mom. Like, you know, yeah. I know there's a middle-aged mom inside you, but there's an even better middle-aged mom inside her.
No, listen, I also read that you said you needed to give yourself permission to write a book with a purely fun premise. What's going on there, Curtis?
Well, I'm like,
you can be fun.
I know. I'm like a dark, pretentious writer. So this was a departure. No, I mean, I was writing this. I started this in the summer of 2021. Mm. And I just wanted to like sort of experience joy and write about comedy and write about romance while I was working, and then sort of give that reading experience to other people. And I haven't really in the past thought in terms of like what would be most fun to write. I think I've thought what would be most interesting, but I just thought like I just want like lightness and fizziness and pleasure.
Yeah.
In all honesty, I don't think I'm like the most fun person, and I would like to be more fun and have
fun
more
to me.
Fun. Oh, yeah. Bless you.
Well, Curtis, thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate this. I appreciate this conversation. I think it was fun.
I think it was super fun.
We had a good time. Curtis Sittenfeld is a best-selling writer from Minneapolis. Her novel, Romantic Comedy, is out now. And guess what? We are giving away one copy for free. You can head to our Instagram page. That's at @commotioncbc. You'll find instructions there on how you can enter our giveaway. That is a Commotion for today. Remember, you can listen to any episode of the show anytime you like, live or on demand on the CBC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts. If you go find our podcast page, for example, you might find our episode about the Succession finale, which you might be interested in. We had a really good time on that one. We went long. I had a wonderful time talking to our guests. My name is El Amin Abdul Mahmoud. I'm going to be here tomorrow. I hope that you're going to be here tomorrow. because then we get to continue the fun that we've been having. Thanks.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.